Stand by. Transmitting sound. Download complete. Now launching audio stream. The Kelly Alexander Show.
It's such an honor to welcome a Grammy Award-winning group that has influenced a generation of hip-hop fans with their unique style. De La Soul dropped by to discuss their Kickstarter campaign and what they plan to do with their fan support. Toronto rock band Sun K talk about their new CD, Northern Lies, and getting noticed in such a competitive industry. Brazilian artist Dom La Nena joins us to talk about her latest album, Soyo, and singing in different languages. We wrap things up with an awesome remix from British girl group M.O. and their hit song, Preach.
Capture your need for sound.
It's a great thrill to welcome to the show a legendary hip-hop group from Long Island, New York. De La Soul has influenced a generation of fans with their jazz-influenced beats and rhymes, and they are Grammy Award winners to boot. We're happy to welcome group member Dave Jadikar to talk about their groundbreaking career and their new Kickstarter campaign. Dave, welcome to the Kelly Alexander Show.
Hey, thanks for having me.
So, Dave, can you just give us a brief history of how you guys actually came together and if you had any idea that, you know, more than 25 years later, you'd still be together and making music?
Yeah, this was never something that we'd imagine being here, still doing what we love to do, create music, get into the studio, perform for over 25 years. We got together pretty much in high school, just getting out of junior high school. Pos and myself used to just hang out, you know, playing basketball, football in the street, stuff like that. And we just kind of like clicked in regards to, you know, what we did outside, off the streets, away from school, collecting music, writing rhymes, interested in hip-hop, and we just connected there on the music vibe, and we would just get together after school sometimes and create ideas and songs and lyrics and stuff like that. And then in the neighborhood, Mace, our DJ, he was the popular DJ in the neighborhood. And of course, you know, hip hop, we need a DJ. So we approached him to see if he would be down a DJ with us. And then we got together and started messing around at home, making songs. And fortunately, we knew of some folks who were already in the business professionally, and we handed them tapes to hear it, and lo and behold, Prince Paul of Stetsasonic had faith in us, and he took us to our label and got a label deal, and the rest is history.
Your debut album, 3 Feet and Rising, was very successful. It's been called a hip-hop masterpiece. It produced amazing tracks like Me, Myself, and I, The Magic Number, and Buddy. If you look back on the CD, what's your favorite track, and do you think it still sounds as fresh today as it did back in 1989? Because I think it's kind of timeless.
Yeah, I think it's a timeless record. I like the album because of its innocence. We got into the game, into the industry, you know, young kids not knowing what the rules were, not knowing what, you know, what the quo was. We just did what we did, and you know, that album is very important, very interesting, very special to us. I think one of my favorite songs on that album is probably Three's a Magic Number. It stemmed from the title, 3 Feet High and Rising. And it's one of those records that, you know, reminds us of even our earlier stage, you know, watching Saturday morning cartoons and hearing songs like Three's a Magic Number and making something out of, you know, one of our favorite childhood songs. So that song is probably like one of my faves on that record.
I'm so, you know, excited to be able to speak to you and get your take on you know, your career and just the rap game in general, especially because, you know, your sound, and I would say the sound of like A Tribe Called Quest, like you guys all had it felt like a positive vibe to me as this kid growing up here in Montreal, Canada, listening to you guys. What is your take on the crazy that was that East Coast, West Coast, you know, feud for so many years, which thankfully it seems for the time being has died down?
Yeah, I think, you know, hip-hop always had its boisterous attitude. It was always about battling, you know, in the early stages. It was about this group versus that group and who was better from this neighborhood and that neighborhood. And hip-hop had always had that element in it. I think in the mid-90s, it kind of got out of whack and it got personal, and it wasn't about skills. It was about just personal beef. And unfortunately, two coasts got involved when it was just between two or four people, And it was a tough time for hip hop. You know, it was sidetracked. The music wasn't important. It was more about the gossip and the hoopla that was going on in the news. But I think we've overcome that. I think, you know, it's nice to see now collaborations between, you know, the West Coast, East Coast, South, Midwest, everybody's getting together and doing stuff. And whether it's, you know, not only the hip hop, but just different genres are getting together. You know, electronic is getting together with hip hop and vice versa, and so many other genres. So it's kind of nice to see us get out of that feuding period and into, you know, collaborating and creating new stuff. But, you know, that was a tough time at one time.
What was it like to be in that realm where it was folks like you and you know, Q-Tip from Tribe and all of them and Queen Latifah and all that, Moni Love? It just felt like there was a lot of positivity with what you guys were doing back in the day.
Yeah, it was a lot of positivity. We were having fun. I mean, remember, we were kids. We were in our teens, our late teens, and we were just having a good time. We didn't know the rules. We didn't know what it was about, you know, marketing and promoting records. We weren't really truly concerned about, you know, SoundScan or, you know, seeing how many spins you were getting. Those things weren't important to us. What was cool was meeting with friends who had, you know, similarities and likes and just having a good time and partying. And I think that generated that positive energy that we was around trying to be happy, you know, trying to live our youth to its fullest. And being, you know, younger folks in the spotlight, we never kind of like took advantage of that. It was nice bumping into people who just loved you and supported you because you were making great music. And that positivity just it just multiplied. It multiplied not only in our attitude and our persons, but it lent to the music as well. We wanted to talk about dancing, having a good time, roller skating, and going out with friends, or even just the day to day stuff like on Steak Society. If we were talking about, you know, washing dishes or, you know, going outside in the backyard and growing your garden. It was just all about having a good time and being a human being and touching on the positive notes in life.
What did it feel like, Dave? Because I remember, I think it was the American Music Awards of 1990. I'm pretty sure. I remember you guys were nominated, you know, for, I guess it was Best Rap Album. What did it feel like, you know, being young guys and then, you know, being sort of thrust onto this national stage?
It's overwhelming. And at times it's disappointing. You begin to see the politics of the game. You begin to see, in some cases, the greed. You know, you begin to see personalities and people change because of success or even lack of. But it was tough. I mean, that was like around our second LP, just really, really absorbing what the industry was about. And it was a bit disheartening. It took away that innocence. It took away that fun. And, you know, it kind of produced an album like De La Soul Is Dead, the follow-up album to 3 Feet High and Rise. And that's how we felt. We felt kind of dead. We felt the spark that we had and the life that we had and how we were blooming and growing on 3 Feet High and Rise and moving forward. Kind of like people stepping on our flowers, like killing it because of just, you know, just the reality and the vibes to the industry. It's cutthroat. It can sometimes be brutal. And it didn't feel good. And I think we also expressed that via music.
Joining us on the Kelly Alexander Show is Dave from legendary hip hop group De La Soul. Make sure to check out their website, wearedelasoul.com, and you can link from there to their Kickstarter campaign, which brings me to this topic. Dave, how did you guys decide to launch a Kickstarter campaign to fund your new project?
Well, I mean, it was something that we were looking for an option. We were looking for option opposed to stepping back in the arena of the industry. You know, we didn't want to partner up with another label or a corporation or an entity, you know, that would, you know, in any way be intrusive, especially when creative, you know. We wanted to be able to have control of, you know, the decision making as well as the creative control. Not, you know, it wasn't as if, you know, labels or executives back in the days came and told us what to make. But, you know, they would definitely get involved. Don't use this sample. You guys should use that sample. Maybe we should use this song because it's really popular now, or that kind of a thing. And it was like, you know, it's kind of hard to tell people back off you know that they mean well, but it becomes like a headache. And we wanted that option to be able to not have to deal with that. And what better option than to find some sort of platform that would allow your fans, the people who have faith in you, the people who back up and allow you to be as artistic as possible, and the people who are going to support you and with every decision you make, and also feel comfortable in telling you, hey guys, what are you doing? I mean, and knowing our fans, they probably know, they, a lot of them are sure kind of like know what mistakes we might be making. It's kind of nice to hear their opinion. And again, what better platform would be than Kickstarter to pursue, to make that kind of an option, a reality. And it's proven itself. The fans have spoken, they've come through, and they've supported this album, and we are completing an album for 2015 because of the fans and Kickstarter.
What did it feel like to see, you know, a group such as TLC come back and do their Kickstarter campaign just earlier in the year, and they obviously blew past their goal really quick? You guys have done the same thing. You wanted, I guess, an original tally of $110,000. You're now, as of this chat with you and I, over $381,000. What does it feel like to know that you have so much support from fans? Because that says a lot, that you've blown past the goal in like 2 days.
It feels great. It feels great to know that There is faith in what we do. Like, people believe in us. I think that's first and foremost what feels really good. I mean, these folks haven't heard any music yet. I mean, and that's the bottom line. You know, they want to hear music. They want to be entertained. They want to enjoy and appreciate something new, creative from a band that they love. And they haven't heard anything yet. And they've invested in making this happen. And that feels amazing. That feels wonderful. And then to say that we've gone beyond our initial goal is even better. It gives us room to sit down and think about, well, what more can we do? These people have funded us, and we have room to do even more. There are a lot of things that are going to come our way with, you know, mixing the record. That's going to be another expense, and promoting and marketing. It doesn't stop at the Kickstarter and at recording the record. There's so much more when we have to release the record, videos and things of that nature. But it also gives us the opportunity to sit down and think about things that I'm sure that the fans would want as well. They would probably love to see, and we would probably love to see, this album go on the road and perform. And bringing a 12, 13-piece band on the road is quite expensive. It's why it didn't happen too much with us previously. So it's great to see it happening, and hopefully it will give us the opportunity to do so many more things for the people who were there to fund it.
Dave, I've wanted to ask you, you know, with this Kickstarter campaign, and you talked a little bit earlier about, you know, not wanting executives involved, whether that was like a record label or even like a large company that would support you. But does it feel now, having the fan support, and they've put up their hard-earned cash and are supporting you, do you almost feel like more of a responsibility to do the best you can? Not that you wouldn't anyways, but it almost feels like this is your base talking to you. This is your troops that want you to do well.
Absolutely. I mean, we do feel like there's a responsibility to you know, follow through. But it feels great. It feels great to know that we're going to make this happen. We would never engage or approach this route, this option, or doing a Kickstarter if we didn't feel like we had something to give. And we're confident of it. But yeah, of course, there's a responsibility. These people have invested, and I think it's definitely up to us to produce. But in no way is there like any. You know, we're not nervous about it. We're not like under pressure about it. We're going to do this, and we're going to do it to its fullest.
I know you obviously can't give us specifics about the new album, but how will this album be different than from what you guys have done in the past?
I think this album is different, but it also returns to the very first album, 3 Feet High and Rising, in regards to how we approached it. I mean, 3 Feet High and Rising was our very first. It was brand new. New venture, you know, new realm, and we didn't know what to expect. So it was an innocent album. We went in and just recorded music. And I think that's what this record returns to and echoes. It's just an innocence here where we've never released an album on our own. We've never crowdfunded. We've never sourced the fans to back us and support us. We've never been the execs, you know, that have to suss out the individuals who are going to run marketing and promoting and get a publicist and et cetera. you know, and this is new to us, and it's a challenge, but it feels great. It feels good getting to this challenge and making it happen, not only creatively, but as executives, I guess you can say, to actually put this record out. And I don't know, that innocence is exciting, and, you know, even if it's in some cases scary, but it's exciting to be able to start fresh from scratch, brand new again, and get excited about doing an album.
Now, De La Soul has been together, you know, for over 25 years. What does it feel like in 2015, Dave, to be a part of this Grammy Award-winning legendary hip-hop group?
It feels really good. I mean, to be able to say that we're still here releasing music is amazing. Like, you know, when you, I'm not comparing to, but when I look at groups like, you know, the Rolling Stones and, you know, at one time the Beatles and, you know, all these amazing groups, you know, and amazing artists, Elvis Costello and so many other people, David Byrne even, who are still releasing music and people are excited and looking forward to a release. That's the category I want to be under. I want to be under a category where even after 25, 30 years, people still get excited. And this is evidence of it. That, like, you know, after 27 years, people are still getting excited about De La. It feels great to 2015 that we can, you know, not necessarily say make news, but we are making news, and it's about how the people and the fans feel, and to know that the essence of the news is the fans being excited about De La Soul releasing music. That's great. That's an amazing feeling.
Dave, well, we are so happy for you. We're so happy that the Kickstarter campaign is going well, and it's been a real treat to speak to you. So thank you so much for spending time with us on the show.
Thank you, Kelly. Appreciate it, man.
That's Dave from Grammy Award-winning hip-hop group De La Soul. Again, make sure to check out their website, wearedelasoul.com, where you can donate to their impressive Kickstarter campaign.
Hey, what's up? Transmitting live from Mars. It's Dave from De La Soul, cooling out here, listening to the Kelly Alexander Show. Peace, y'all.
Mirror, mirror on the wall, tell me, mirror, what is wrong? Can it be my daylight clothes or is it just my daylight song? What I do ain't make believe. People say I sit and try, but when it comes to being daylight, it's just me, myself, and I. 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 It's just me, myself, and I. It's just me, myself, and I. It's just me, myself, and I. From me, myself, and I. It's just me, myself, and I. It's just me, myself, and I. It's just me, myself, and I. Glory, glory, hallelujah. Glory for plus one and two. But that glory's been denied by cassettes and gookie eyes. People think they diss my person by stating I'm darkly packed. I know this, so I point at Q-Tip and he states
black is black.
Mirror, mirror on the wall, shovel chestnuts in my path. Just keep all nuts lifting up so I don't get an aftermath. But if I do, I'll calmly punch them in the fourth day of July. Cause they try to mess with third degree, that's me, myself, and I. It's just
me, myself, and I. It's just me, myself, and I. It's just me, myself, and I.
Joined by a band that's been working hard to get to the next level. Sun K are based out of Toronto and have been earning their stripes at various bars and clubs and have recently released their debut album called Northern Lies. Lead singer Christian Montano is here to talk about how the band came about, where they're headed, and the ins and outs of their new CD. Christian, welcome to the Kelly Alexander Show.
Thank you for having me, Kelly.
So it sounds like it's been a bit of a winding road with how the guys in the band actually came together. Do you think it was meant to be that you all finally found one another?
Yeah, it really came together in a very interesting way, and we crossed paths at different times in our lives, so it does feel kind of serendipitous how we all met and how it came together.
So why the name Sun K? What does that stand for?
It's supposed to be rooted in the history of folk and rock and roll and blues music and things like that, and I always wanted something that kind of took from the past, so it's supposed to be a reference to artists like Sun Ra and Sun House, who are jazz and blues musicians from the 40s and 50s. So yeah, it's supposed to be a bit of a reference to that era.
Cool. Now, if I understand things correctly, you actually started out doing like solo music. Did you actually plan on being in a band at some point?
Yeah, I mean, music was always always a part of my life, and I'd planned to be in a band, in my own band, and I'd started writing music seriously about 3 or 4 years ago. I had my own solo record, but you know, nothing ever really happened to it. Until Sun K kind of came together.
What's it like actually being the front man of an up-and-coming band? Do you find there's a lot of pressure on you specifically to make it work? Because I'm assuming some leadership abilities fall to you when it comes to the band.
Yeah, it's a bit of a whirlwind, and you know, I wasn't really expecting it, but the guys, they're always there, and they have my back, and they've been helping me out with every step of the way.
Joining us on the show is Christian Montano, lead singer of Toronto-based rock band Sun K. Check out their website, sunkofficial.com. When I was reading your bio information, I read that, you know, you have a history with McGill University here in Montreal, where I'm based out of and the show is based out of. Did you find, like, it's funny, I've also lived in Toronto, so I know the vibe of both cities. Did you ever consider staying here in Montreal, or did you think, you know, being in Toronto was the place to be musically?
It's interesting because Montreal has such a huge history in music. And our trumpet and keyboard player, Stuart Tuck, actually played in a number of bands in Montreal as well. But I've always said that Montreal is kind of a great place to get lost in. And so for me personally, when I left Montreal, it was a great time for me to leave. And it was another kind of serendipitous thing where it just happened to be Toronto where people started to notice the music and where I started gaining traction.
Now, speaking of Toronto, I think a lot of people would say that that's sort of the mecca of you know, media and entertainment when it comes to Canada. So obviously you're in a good place. Do you ever feel, though, the burning desire to head to New York City or to Los Angeles? Like do you think that's going to need to happen for you guys to be successful on a larger scale?
Absolutely. I mean, Toronto is the place to be in Canada, I think. I think it's a great place to launch our music, and it's been fantastic to us. However, I'd love to go to Southern California or New York and see if we can make it in that bigger market where there are so many bands out there, you know?
Have you ever had the thought that maybe you guys would be successful even moving overseas to like an England? Because I know there's a lot of support for music like you guys are doing over in Europe.
Yeah. I mean, England is another place where we'd love to go. We'd love to go to Europe. And we've had a number of people and friends who have been quite successful over there. Our friend Jeff Beadle, he just recently did a tour of Germany. And he doesn't have a lot of success here, but he does there. So it's definitely something that's on our mind. But I feel like we could probably, if something like that ever happened, we'd be happy to tour somewhere like that.
Now, why call the album Northern Lies? What's it all about? And again, where did the title come from?
It's actually a lyric in the lead single, New York City Blues. So it's in the second verse, and it goes, "If northern lies guide the way, well, that's our cross to bear." And it felt like kind of an encompassing theme across the record. Not necessarily lies, but about that time in our lives where we are trying to find the right way. You know, we're trying to you know, follow that northern light. We're trying to kind of filter through a time when there's a lot of, I mean, it's truth, love, loss, and deception. That's kind of the overall encompassing theme of the record, and that title seemed to fit that.
Now, from what I understand, the album is produced by Cone McCaslin of Sum 41. How did you guys hook up? What was it like working with him, and what do you think he pulled out of you as a band?
He's been amazing. We linked up actually when I was doing a solo thing. I was doing a 3-hour residency at this place called the Magpie Tap Room in Toronto. And I was playing to a completely empty bar. I'm not even kidding. It was completely empty. He walked in with his wife and stayed for my entire set. And then we started working together, and he's really been the one who's been helping push me to write more songs and helping me find a sound that is unique to ourselves and unique to myself as a songwriter, and really helping push the arrangements in a really cool direction.
How would you describe the band sonically? Because I'm always finding it interesting when other people describe the band for you, but how do you guys see yourselves?
You know, we'd say something like it's kind of like Woodstock folk meets smoky barroom rock and roll with a little bit of bluesy psychedelia in it. And it's been described as folk and roll, and that's something that we're comfortable embracing, but I think it's important to reference all these different types of music that we try to encompass and include.
How does the writing process go for you? Like, does it all fall on your shoulders, or is it like a cohesive unit as the band working on everything together?
It varies, to be honest, because I've had some of the songs for quite a while. Like, Land of Kings is a song I wrote about 4 years ago, and so I've been sitting with that one for quite a while. But there are other songs like New York City Blues, which was much more of a skeleton, which I took with the guys, and we really they really helped craft it and develop it into the song that it is now. So it really depends. Most of the actual songwriting and lyrics does fall on my shoulders, but then when it comes to arrangement, everyone tends to add their own part.
You mentioned earlier a bit of jazz influence, I think, and obviously you mentioned blues just moments ago. Does that seep into what you guys are about? And what artists from the past do you guys really look up to?
It does. It definitely makes its way into the music. And there's that kind of classic influence that I think we embody as well. So for me personally, as a songwriter, I look up to guys like Lou Reed, and Mark Bolan and Neil Young, obviously, you know, great Canadian songwriters like that. But I think the influences are also broad because every member in the band is attached to a different time and a different style of music. And in the end, it really creates this full sound that references the past and references that 60s and 70s bluesy rock and roll, but also has a fresh take on it due to what everyone's bringing to the table.
Now, this next question might be a bit difficult, but I think it's important maybe even for yourself to answer, because there's, you know, there's so many bands, not only here in Canada, but obviously in the States and in Europe and across the world. How do you, or how would you, if someone came up to you and said, what makes you different, like what makes Sun K different to stand apart from the other bands, what do you say that X factor is for you guys?
I'd say you have to see us live. I think there's an energy and a diversity in the tracks. And that's what I mean by seeing it live. I think you can see that we really try to bring this raw rock and roll energy, but then we can really tame it and bring it down for this, like a song like The Road or Hymn for the Living, for me, has this psychedelic folk aspect to it, which I don't think is being explored quite by a lot of people, I'd say, right now. Which for me is really cool to hear. When the record was finally completed, it was an awesome listen for all of us.
How do you feel the state of Canadian music is today? Do you think we're in a healthy place? And are there bands, you know, whether it's in Toronto or across the country that stick out to you that, you know, you're proud that they're doing that well?
I think the scene is actually incredible right now, and as I get more and more involved in it, it just blows my mind even more and more. I mean, for me, artists like Tobias Gesso Jr. is really blowing my mind at the moment, what he's doing. And he's from Vancouver, and we're friends with guys from Ruben in the Dark, and they're really, you know, they're doing their own folky kind of thing. So it's really, I think it's really booming right now, and I think people are really grabbing onto it, not just in Canada, but in other markets.
Have you guys sat down as a band and discussed, you know, short-term and long-term goals, or are you just sort of going along for the ride right now? Because I know, you know, it's a difficult, as much fun as it can be, I think, to be in a band, it's also got its challenges.
Yeah, it's a little bit of both. We do meet once every other week to kind of discuss everything that's happening and where we want to go with things. But right now, since we're just at the beginning, we're just happy to be playing. And we don't really have any expectations. We don't really, we have goals, but we don't have any expectations for where it's going to go. We're just hitting the road and happy that people are responding really well to the music right now.
Talk to us about hitting the road. Obviously, the album just dropped. Where are you guys headed?
We are doing a whole cross-country tour, so we're actually on the way home from the East Coast right now. Our last show is in Fredericton, which is an amazing place to play, which is the Capitol Complex. So we're back in Toronto on Wednesday at the Dakota Tavern, then doing a couple Southern Ontario dates before we hit the West Coast for about 2.5-3 weeks.
Fantastic. Christian, thank you so much for this. We really appreciate it, and we wish you all the best with the album, with the tour.
Thank you so much, Kelly.
That's Christian Montano, lead singer of Toronto-based rock band Sun K. Check out their website, sunkofficial.com.
Hey, it's Christian Montano from Sun K, and you're hanging out with the Kelly Alexander Show.
Bed, let down your hair, tie me up, pour some red, those walls are getting bare, and I have been waiting for you to save me from my wanted company, so honey, you should see, and I've been lonely for I'm
It's the Kelly Alexander Show.
We've gone international on the Kelly Alexander Show, welcoming our next guest, who is a talented young singer and cellist from Brazil, Dom Lanena, who is releasing her new album, Soyo, on March the 3rd. Dom, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Hi.
So, Dom, can you tell us how your musical journey began? Did you start singing first, or was learning the cello sort of on top of everything?
Yeah, no, I started actually with the piano when I was very little. I had 5 years old. And then I started with the cello at 8. And I actually started to sing very late, like a few years ago.
Oh, wow.
I started to work as a cellist and to play with a lot of singers in France, where I live. And then I wanted to compose my own music. And actually, it became songs. What I did was songs, but it wasn't really premeditated. I mean, it was just, it came like this. So as I had songs, I had to sing them. So I started to sing. It was like a fatality.
Oh, very cool. Now, I have to ask you about the cello. Why the cello? We don't often hear of people who are cellists.
Well, actually, yeah. There was many reasons, but when I decided to be that I want really wanted to be a cellist is when I arrived in Paris because I moved to Paris and I was 8 years old with my parents. My father went to do his doctorate there, and then I started to go to a public music school there, and I was 8 years old, but there was people that was finishing the school like with 20 or 22 years old, and they were playing all the music I used to listen at home on CDs, cello music, I could see students play them, and it was quite exciting, and it makes me realize that I could one day maybe play them too.
Now, when you write your music, do you use your cello as the foundation, or do you compose on the piano first?
Well, it depends. It happened that I used the cello, but the cello is not really an instrument to be an accompanist.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
The piano is better to compose. Sometimes when I'm on the road or when I don't have a piano with me, I do on the cello, or sometimes I just have an idea on the cello and I do it on the cello, but it really depends.
Okay. Now, your new album is called Soyo. If you can explain the title, because a lot of our listeners are obviously English, and also, what do you want people to experience when they're listening to your new CD?
I call the album Soyo because I lived in Argentina for many years, and so I sing a lot in Spanish too. And the first song of the album is called La Nena Soyo, that means La Nena, I am La Nena.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
So I wanted first to call the album like this, La Nena Soyo, but then it was too many repetitions, La Nena, Dom La Nena, La Nena Soyo. So I decided to call it Soyo in two words, that means I am. And then there is two, I decided to put it in one only word. And it's actually a word that doesn't exist. So I like the idea to have something more subtle. And when you speak Spanish, you understand it like it's soyo, it's like it's me. But it's soyo in one word could be anything, what you want. It could be a place, could be a name, could be a food, could be anything.
Joining us on the Kelly Alexander Show is singer and cellist Dom Lanena. Make sure you check out her website, domlanena.com. Now, the album is in Portuguese, except for one song called Juste une Chanson. Do you enjoy singing in different languages?
Yeah, well, actually, I sing a lot in Spanish, too. A lot of people don't realize it's two different languages, mm-hmm. but the half of the album is in Spanish. There is a lot of songs in Portuguese, too, but on this album, there is more Spanish than Portuguese. So there is this French song, and there is also an English song called Carnaval, which is, I didn't write the lyrics. I asked a friend, an English songwriter called Chris Facchini, who did the lyrics. But yeah, I really like to sing in different language, because it's, for me, the language is like an instrument. Sometimes it's very rhythmical or melodical, and it can really change the song. Some sounds came with some words that only works in Spanish or in Portuguese or in English. It's something very, very musical for me, the language choice.
Dom, do you think you'll ever record completely in English? Obviously, I think the languages you're doing is amazing, and they're romance languages, so obviously the music will sound amazing. But I find so many artists around the world, like I just interviewed a group from Belgium, and they have chosen to record pretty much specifically in English. Do you think singing in English opens up the market for you more?
I don't know. I try to not think like this. For me, it's more musical, you know. I'm not really thinking about markets, and I just if one day I want to do songs in English, I'll do it. But you know, it's not natural for me to write lyrics in English. I don't really speak very well, so I don't feel, at least now, it's something that will come naturally.
Okay. Well, I think you're doing very well in English, so don't worry about that.
Well, I tried to.
You're doing very, very well. Now, I read that the CD was recorded in many different locations, Paris, Lisbon, and Mexico City. Do you think these different cities brought, you know, different flavors to what the album ended up being?
I don't know if the places... I think that, of course, cities are very influenced on your life and on your feelings, I think. But I live in Paris, so I did my part there, and then I had to travel to Mexico with my husband because he was working there, and I had to record there, but it was only for a few weeks I was in the city. And then I produced the album with a Brazilian musician who lives in Lisbon, so I went there to work with him. I think it was more a coincidence to record the album in different places. It wasn't something really deep or something with a real, something really symbolical, you know. It was just a coincidence for me.
Now, I know that you're going to promote the new album in different places around Canada. I know you're doing a lot of dates, it sounds like, in Quebec. What was the goal to come over to Canada? Has it always been something that you've wanted to do?
Well, I came a lot, actually. I always came to the French part of Canada, to Quebec, but I already, it's the third time I'm coming. Last winter, I did a long tour here, and I actually came the summer of 2 years ago to Montreal Jazz Fest and Quebec Summer Festival. And actually, it's quite surprising for me because, you know, my record label is American, so they first released my first album here and in the USA. And we immediately had a lot of great feedbacks from Quebec and requestings to come to make shows, so I came. it's really a surprise for me, actually. I never really thought I really want to go to Quebec, but then when I came one time, the audience here is so very open and very curious and very, very demonstrated. So it's always a pleasure to come. But this time is the first time I'm going to the English part of Canada. So I'm really curious about it and to see how the audience is.
How do you feel about, you know, Quebec? Obviously, we have people that are listening from here. We also have listeners that are listening as far away as Australia. But do you notice a difference when you come to North America as opposed to your home audiences over in Europe?
I think it's funny because sometimes you just change a city, but it's closed cities, but then it's a totally different reaction in each one, you know. But I think, of course, the French audience, for example, is an audience very calm and very quiet and quite not shy, but you know, they are really listening and very they have like, yeah, they are shy. I think they are shy. and then when you come to USA or to Quebec, they are much more demonstrative and more, I don't know, they seem happier. I don't know why.
That's good to know. I'm happy we're happy over here. Before I let you go, Dom, what are your goals as an artist? Like, where do you see yourself in the next, you know, 18 months to 2 years?
Oh, well, I'll be touring a lot. I see myself on the road because I see the itinerary I'm doing, but I don't know. It's very exciting when you tour. You learn so much about music, about yourself, about how you really feel you're doing like an intensive masterclass of music. You know, when you touring with certain intensity. So I'm very excited to see what will I learn on this tour.
That's amazing. Well, we wish you all the best, and thank you so much for making time with us on the show this week.
Thank you. It's a pleasure.
That's recording artist and cellist Dawn Lanenna. And again, make sure you check out her website, dawnlanenna.com.
Soy yo. companies. Come on, breathe. Say you're gonna leave, then maybe you should go. Or you can't breathe. And oh, I better believe it. Oh, 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 oh.
Alexander Show.
Thank you so much for spending time with us on the show. We always appreciate it. And a big thank you going out to my guests, De La Soul, Sun K, and Dom Lanena. And here is your thought-provoking quote of the week, this time coming from Mahatma Gandhi. There is nothing that wastes the body like worry, and one who has any faith should be ashamed to worry about anything whatsoever. Please make sure to follow us on our social media, on Twitter, at K Alexander Show, on Facebook, Kelly Alexander Show, on Instagram, at Kelly Alexander Show, and of course our YouTube channel, which features our interviews, youtube.com/KellyAlexanderShow. Have an amazing week. If you've got any comments or questions, Kelly at KellyAlexanderShow.com. You and I will chat soon.